I'm Kristen McFarland, and this is Market Like a Badass. I'm the founder and CEO of the Source Marketing Group, a marketing technology company in Denver, Colorado, focused on highly regulated markets like cannabis and craft beer. The theme this season is innovation in cannabis tech, so you'll hear a combination of digital marketing and technology tips to grow your revenue this year. But we even have a special guest to add additional value to what you're doing in cannabis tech from a really unique perspective. This podcast is brought to you by the Source Marketing Group, and today we're going to hear from special guest Kat Kinnon. Nearly 73% of adults in the U.S. have experienced some type of traumatic event at least once in their lives, and marketers can make money off of that. Despite its advancements, modern marketing still relies on techniques meant to make their customers feel inadequate, resulting in customer alienation, negative brand perception, and increased customer complaints. And it doesn't have to, and it shouldn't have to be this way. And that's why I'm excited for you all to meet Kat Kinnon, certified trauma-informed professional and founder and CEO of Radical Customer Experience and BVScore.ai. We'll cover why strengths-based and trauma-informed marketing matters, how she provides tailored advice for companies by using her brand inclusion index, an actionable alternative to Net Promoter Score, and how her experiences with complex PTSD have made her a passionate advocate for all trauma survivors. Welcome, Kat.
Thank you. I'm thrilled to be here.
Excited to have you on. And, you know, it's been a couple years in the making, so I'm really excited to geek out. And I think it's a perfect time to help spread the message. But tell our audience a little bit more about yourself and what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm a career marketer, marketing CMO. A couple years ago, I founded Radical Customer Experience. So that's the consultancy piece where I bring together all of my marketing expertise along with being a trauma-informed professional. And I know, you know, as a business person, you're sitting here listening to this and saying, like, what does trauma have to do with business? The reality is, exactly like you said, it's 73, probably 75% of people have experienced some form of trauma. And it doesn't have to be the big stuff, right?
Yeah.
In many cases, it is big stuff, but sometimes it's something small, losing a loved one. Even moving houses is very traumatic. So, you know, when it comes to marketing, 99.9% of our marketing is fear-based. It's about urgency. It's about inducing panic, really. Like,
yeah, buy now.
Buy now. Or
limited time.
My favorite, least favorite is, you know, anytime you're clicking on, say, the TikTok shops of the world or anything on Instagram, it's so and so many people are viewing this page right now. And you have 10 minutes, you know, 5 minutes, and it counts down until you lose that deal. What we're finding with research is that when you create that kind of messaging, you know, you might get a purchase, but you don't get loyalty.
Mm.
The shopper ends up kind of feeling like icky.
Yeah.
And, you know, no one wants to end a shopping experience with your customer feeling yucky.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the big thing.
Wow. And I want to geek out so much because you're right. I mean, in taking over accounts, A/B testing, you see what other people are doing. And, you know, we could talk a lot about what we're seeing in the market. But before we talk about, you know, business background, insights, and we geek out on marketing, I want to ask the most important question of the day, which is, what are you grateful for?
Ooh, I'm grateful for the new apartment I'm about to move into.
Ooh, congrats. Yeah. Yes, I love it.
And of course, my kids. And, you know,
yes, well, that's a great milestone. So congrats on that move. And yeah, hopefully making everything all zen-like and feeling like home.
Absolutely.
Oh, I love. Well, now we're going to talk a little bit about your, again, business background, insights. You know, you have a lot of really unique experience. So let's dive a little bit deeper into trauma-informed marketing. You know, again, we're going to say that a lot today, And we talked about some of the examples, right? Like limited time only. And I see that all the time. And, you know, why do people need to care about this? Well, why do we care about if it makes them have some urgency? But to your point, you're saying this can impact loyalty, which also impacts customer lifetime value, which is money in your pocket.
Absolutely. I've been writing a lot about this and, you know, have come across some examples where you have really, really positive ROI that comes from, you know, just flipping that switch and flipping the messaging. Mm-hmm. So, you know, imagine you're, this is a high pressure one, like getting a new mattress, right? It's so stressful and so many deals and, you know, and it's counting down, or even if you're in the store, the amount of sales pressure versus someone or online saying like, hey, this is the price, the deal's here, take your time, right? And when you walk away with that purchase, you feel so much better and, you know, not triggered in any way. So,
Gosh, you're triggering me now because you're thinking, well, no, I just mean thinking about the mattress buying experience. Because so my fiance and I were just talking about this, like, everything's very sales heavy and it's like you're confused because you're like, what the hell is latex versus whatever the heck this other option is? And yet they're just throwing like deal after deal. And I'd been on the website for 5 minutes and had gotten probably like five different types of offers. It's confusing. It's maddening. I'm like, I don't even know what to do. And so maybe is it instead of that, is it sending them down like education paths or like how do you conquer that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, I think it can be education, mm-hmm. but I think even more than that, it's maybe lead with data. Maybe what kind of data are you hearing back from customers that have purchased a certain model? Use it to your advantage. And we have some really infamous, famous examples of brands using data in that way. But education is a path, but just giving someone time. You know I've had in-store experiences where it's like, I'm here if you need me, right? And, or I just wrote about a great Sephora example. So a very different kind of store where it was one particular store that had black baskets and red baskets, right? Mm-hmm. And by the display, it says, hey, black basket, I'm fine. I don't want anyone, you know, I want to be left alone.
Yeah.
And the red basket, there might have been vice versa. The red basket is please help me. And what seems like just a simple shopping preference is actually much deeper. So it could, the leave me alone sort of shopping could be for someone who's neurodiverse or as I like to say, neurospicy.
Yes.
And, you know, it could be really overwhelming. Like maybe you're really introverted. So going into a store can be really overwhelming, but you just want to get in and get out. And you don't have to be worried about, you know, having perfume sprayed at you or people aggressively. That's more on the department store beauty, but hey.
You're so right, though.
Yeah.
I think now, like, just to take this back to cannabis a little bit, it's like, you know, you're always, you know, in store, you could have a barrage of like brand ambassadors trying to promote their brand. Like, is there a way to create just a better, like, you know, and that's, I think, also like giving people the options of like order ahead and you can pick up, you don't have to go inside. But even the approach, you know, to messaging and campaigns can be different because I feel like when you are helping the customer from a trauma-informed perspective, you're providing education. And now it actually helps the industry because now you're not competing on price and we're not dealing with price compression in all these markets where it's a race to the bottom on who can sell the cheapest eighth.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, in my career on the marketing side, where you're always kind of butting heads with sales a little, right? Instead of realizing that you're two halves of the same coin, is me constantly having to educate, look, if you're fighting on price, you're having the wrong conversation.
Yeah.
So what you as a company or you as a salesperson bring to the table has nothing to do with price because research indicates consistently that customers will spend more for a brand that, you know, maybe it stands for your values. Maybe it's just like how your rep handles things. You know, it's all about relationships. And if the words trauma-informed feel really overwhelming for you, let's talk about empathy, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's part of that circle. I always kind of put empathy in the middle and trauma-informed and psychological safety all kind of, and then coming out, right? And further.
Yeah. Gosh, that's so true. I want to go so many directions with it just because I'm like, wow, like I'm on both sides of the coin. I'm a consumer and then I'm a marketer. So I understand that pressure of like, well, and then also some people's scarcity mindset as well. So it's like limited time, let's push this out. But I can see how, you know, if you take that trauma-informed approach, that it can impact everything from messaging campaigns, how you're showing up in email, social, allowing people to opt out of campaigns around Mother's Day if their mom might have passed away. Yeah. So there's a ton of opportunity there. But is there a way that we should be thinking about like content in general, maybe differently?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I think holidays are a really good concrete example to think about, because when it's coming, you know, upon a holiday, whether it's Mother's Day or Father's Day or the end of year holidays, like they're inherently traumatic in a lot of ways, right? And I had this experience personally with a brand in Brooklyn here in New York called Uncommon Goods, where,
oh yeah,
where it was, you know, one of my first Mother's Day without my mom, right? Very raw. And I got a text message that said, hey, we know this time of year is tough for many of you. Click here to opt out of Mother's Day messaging. And, you know, that's versus every commercial, every social post, every email, sometimes multiple per day. Like how many brands email you more than once a day, right?
Yeah.
And putting that kind of pressure on you, for me, like that felt very overwhelming. Like my mom was gone, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, even though it's been, you know, 5 or 6 years, I still don't like to celebrate Mother's Day. It's just not the same for me. And Uncommon Goods was a brand that I was like a huge fan of, had shopped there for, you know, probably 20 years. But there's a difference between someone who's loyal and someone who you've gotten to them like at the root. I always point at my solar plexus, where, you know, now I've gone on and not only did my loyalty increase, right? But I've now told literally every soul I know, whether it's in a marketing context on a podcast or friends, when I talk about what I do. I'm waiting for my check from Uncommon Goods, to be honest, but kidding. But we've, you know, then we've also seen other brands like jump up and do this, like Etsy split up something, Ancestry. I think in those cases, it was around Father's Day, but there are brands sporadically, is how I would put it, sporadically doing trauma-informed marketing, likely without even really realizing like kind of what's going on.
Yeah.
But still, it's so admirable in terms of like flipping that switch, right? And at the end of the day, if your customer that is opting out, Uncommon Goods or another brand, they're just cleaning their data, right?
Yeah.
So think about it from that perspective, like from a data hygiene perspective, which is something we all hate to do, right? It's like boring town in marketing land, but it's so critical. So, so critical.
Yeah. It's a two-way street. It's like you get to be empathetic and understanding towards your customers, but your deliverability is going to be a hell of a lot better because they're self-opting out. Like, otherwise, it's hard. You look at your list. I have this conversation all the time as we're working with new campaign managers, maybe with clients that we're supporting them monthly with strategy and whatnot. And they often wonder that on the segmentation of like, okay, so I can see we have like women engaged, but you know, how would they know? And so you can ask those questions, give them an opportunity to opt out because you don't know everything. And so, you know, I think that just understanding, you know, do you have a preference center or, you know, just making sure you can be conscious of those things. I know that it's getting bigger, especially in the email space. I see it, Women of Email, that group, shout out to that amazing organization, but they've talked about that quite a bit, you know, but it is around, to your point, it's very, I think marketers look at it as like, oh, Father's Day or you know, Mother's Day, but then maybe aren't incorporating that throughout the years.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think of end of year holidays, right? And that last 6 weeks of the year for so many brands is worth more than a quarter of their revenue for the year.
Yes.
And so you have to push out content, right? But how many of us, let's be honest, like how many of us, you know, whether it's you, Kristen, or someone that's listening, mm-hmm. how many of us have some negative associations with the holiday?
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, gosh.
Family is stressful. It was just like, you know, I'm going to see my family for Thanksgiving or for the open presents. Oh, my God. You know?
Yeah. The anxiety kicks in.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, how can we think about maybe some messaging that isn't, you know, thinking about the old Folgers commercial when Peter comes home. I was like struggling for his name. You know, maybe there are other kinds of messages, right? That we can do.
Yep, exactly. And I love that approach. And I hope that in highly regulated markets like cannabis, craft beer, spirits, like you all should be doing this like more than anybody, because like, you know, especially on the, like you have cannabinoids, like, you know, on the hemp cannabis, like it's very wellness oriented. Like you should be treating them that way in terms of your customer base.
Yeah.
And so I'm excited to geek out. I want to dive into more marketing tips soon, but I want to make sure, like, you have some really cool stuff going on with the BVScore.ai. And your book that's upcoming. I want to make sure we touch on that. So can you share what's something unique about your business that you'd want everyone to know about?
Well, yeah. So with BVScore.ai, we realized on the consultancy side that we really needed an alternative marketing metric that things like Net Promoter or, you know, brand affinity or customer satisfaction really weren't hitting at it. And then as we looked at it more, we actually realized that none of those metrics, wait for it, are scientifically valid. So with Net Promoter, as an example, it's one question. Well, from a scientific polling perspective, you need at least three questions. So right off the bat, before you even look at how it's structured, it's not scientifically valid.
So many companies anchor on that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And P.S., they throw out like, I think it's 6, 7, and 8. So they don't even count those scores. Yeah, that was a pretty mind-blowing one for me too. And so, and when you're asking, hey, would you recommend this to a friend? Doesn't it depend on the day for you as a customer? Sometimes on the hour. I was having this conversation the other day about Adobe Creative Cloud, which so many of us are beholden to, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't know what to do without Illustrator. But I always have the pop-up, would you recommend this to a friend? Like constantly, you know, at least once a day you see it. But it's like, was I frustrated with InDesign today and it was pissing me off? Or did I create a really successful design and I was super happy and feeling really proud of myself? Well, I'm going to choose something different. And tomorrow, when maybe I'm frustrated, I'm going to choose yet a different answer. And so then what kind of insight is it giving you? It's not really giving you anything actionable at all because the scores are then meaningless.
Yeah.
Which brings me to actual BV Score AI. So yeah. It's the brand vulnerability score. And what that means is, you know, how vulnerable, how at risk are you as a company? And you know, it's a survey tool with questions that are very, very specifically worded using psychology. And we look at three specific factors. One is empathy. Do your customers feel seen and heard? The other is honesty. Do they trust you? If you have to apologize, well, one, will you apologize, right? Two, if you apologize, do you mean it? And that comes from the individual interaction all the way to a big, you know, corporate mishap. I'll use that word, be kind. And lastly, we look at really whether or not brands are putting their money where their mouth is in terms of like CSR, ESG. Do they talk about the environment or do they embody it in everything that they do? You know, are you greenwashing or is it something that's incorporated into your DNA? Like think of a Patagonia, right? And so that comes with a score. Like many other scores, it's 1 to 100. And the higher the score, the better. And we have scores now for over 50 major brands. And so any of them can call me at any time. Just go to bbscore.ai and you'll see your score.
Amazing.
And we can talk more about it.
Oh, that's so cool. And yeah, brand vulnerability. I think that's such a good way. It's like, are you tapping in to truly like the things that matter? Because to me, that's so, the NPS can change and there's some smart ways we can talk about using that still, you know, to maybe like, hey, before we send them down to this review flow, let's check in and do an NPS review.
Yeah.
And then if it's good, we can send them and ask them for a Google review.
Yeah.
If not, we need to send them an internal survey and then they need to be able to vent to our team and tell us about these issues. So there's like, there's still ways to get value out of that. But I love that, you know, the BV score is just more impactful and encompassing of like, whether or not you're going to stay in business, you know, and continue to serve your customers in the long run.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of these big behemoth brands are just in for a world of hurt. Some of them already are, but the up and coming brands don't have an expectation that their customers are never going to go away. And I think so many big brands, and you can think about that from like craft beers versus some of the big alcohol companies, right? Where they might find themselves a little surprised at some point and they won't have seen it coming.
So true. I love all of what you've shared. And I know you did touch on a book. So is that something that's coming out soon as well?
I'm working on it now. I've been diligently writing every day, but it is about trauma-informed workspaces. That was the first book. And being trauma-informed in marketing, empathic marketing, psychological safety as it relates to marketing. So that's sort of the perfect complement to the first project I did, which was about empathy in the workplace.
Oh, that's amazing. And congrats. I've always wanted to write a book and I will. One day, I don't know. I'm torn between, you know, what I'm going to dive into first. But, you know, you're an inspiration because, you know, you're doing a lot of really cool, innovative stuff that is really just going to help people get smarter and more connected to their customers. And so I want to talk a little bit more about some marketing tips and tricks and how to market like a badass. So let's geek out a little bit on, you know, how can customers use data to approach messaging from a strengths position and still get ROI?
Yeah. So, you know, I sort of touched on it earlier without discussing the brand, but we see things like Spotify end of year wrap up. That's data as its best. And I know also in New York, we have Subway ads, right? And I always know a company's gotten funding if they do put up ads in the Subway. But Grubhub has put up some really great ads that like, hey, we know the Upper East Side orders this dish more than anything else. We know that, you know, the West Village orders this dish more than anything else. And that's just, you can kind of, you take that data and you can make something cute, but at the end of the day, it's still strength-based. You're not creating any kind of fear, you know, or fear-based messaging. Where I see it a lot with cosmetic companies, maybe it is a Sephora, where customer favorites is very different than saying, this is on sale and you have a limited time. Now, of course, the interesting part about all of this is no brand gets it 100% right. So you might see any of those same brands doing the fear-based tactics and doing strength-based tactics.
True. Yeah.
It's hard. It's very hard once you to really get going and really understand. But, you know, those are a couple of examples of using data from a strength-based perspective.
I love it. And I see cannabis companies wising up and getting even more intentional with how they're using data to come from that strengths position. And I'll give you an example. Like we just, in the Source Marketing Group, we just helped Quality Roots, a multi-location, you know, retail dispensary with 8 stores in Michigan, import over 250,000 customer profiles from FlowHub, POS, and Klaviyo, and really get that set up. So then we have all kinds of really cool data in there now, you know, can build out the KDP, which is like the Klaviyo CDP. And now we can do a Spotify wrapped version, but for weed. Now, it's really going to be focused on like, you know, hey, Susan, these are your top categories. Here are your top brands like Jeter, you loved, you know, and we can get really smart and personalized in ways that other people just maybe aren't taking advantage of because they're so stuck in that fear-based or like sales tactic, like sell, sell, sell. I see so many accounts where it's just all promo emails and scarcity mindset.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, again, we talked about holidays, even like a 4th of July, right? Where brands are, they're fearful, right? They feel like they need to deliver results that are higher than the year before. And so it's a fear-based mindset, both internally as a company and externally.
Wow. So, so true.
But you'll find examples all over the place of brands that have flipped that switch. Which brand was I just looking at? Oh, it was a telecoms company in the UK, O2, that really touched on giving digital access to everybody. And so here they were. Talk about being trauma-informed. Here they were really touching on things like systemic poverty, but without appearing activist, right? Because they made it this really positive message about giving everyone telecom service, with phone or internet, what have you, right? So, so smart.
It's amazing. I love stuff like that. And again, you don't, it just gives you more creative ways to connect. And every touch point is so important, and you don't have to use it to drive people away.
Yeah. You know? Absolutely.
And so, you know, I've seen people on LinkedIn, I got to go here because this is an argument I see a lot. They'll argue about like brands or even a personal brand when you say, oh, I'm building my personal brand. Oh, people don't connect to brands like humans. Do you think that's true? I mean, how is brand affinity built?
Well, I think that we are all human, and just like we're not a work self and a home self, right? You know, at the end of the day, a brand, a company is made up of human beings. And so when it comes to individual customer interactions, sometimes it's obvious, right? It's like a specific customer service associate. Someone's calling in, someone, you know, talk to someone in store. But when you send out messaging that starts with empathy, that starts being trauma-informed or strengths-based, that's also the same thing. Yes, I believe in personal brands, but at the end of the day, I'm Kat Kennan, and I'm also Radical Customer Experience, and I'm also BB Score AI, right? Because those brands, my companies would not exist without me.
Exactly.
And, you know, even the tone we use in our marketing messages is purely 100% Kat.
Yeah. So true. I mean, yeah, we do business with people we like doing business with at the end of the day. Like, you know, and so finding that way to still be human. And that is how you cut through the noise, because AI can't replicate that in a world where, like, and we're going to have another episode this season on ethical AI, but you know, there's a lot of AI happening and, you know, it's spitting out a lot of generic content. And so to me, I think taking this approach can also be a differentiator for your brand and show that you're still thinking about humans in a world full of bots, you know, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, AI is incredibly powerful, and even our platform uses it once we have the data and does some really cool analysis, things that would take us a very long time to do.
Yeah. Ooh.
But there is a way to implement it where you're not creating garbage content.
Yes.
You know, the more trained it is, the more highly, you know, even restrictions around it, what it can do, how it should do it. Like, that's when you're getting into the sweet spot of AI that can really drive some powerful stuff for you. But to say it replaces, I don't know who here has just gotten the update on iPhone, but it's like fully integrated with AI now.
Yep.
And it's horrible.
Yeah.
Horrible. Autocorrect is horrible. Like, everything is just like, it's, and I've talked about it with friends, and all of us are just like, why?
Wow.
You know?
Yep.
We were happy before, right?
Wow. Are there any tools that you recommend for AI for like just a typical everyday user or maybe a marketer or copywriter? Is there one over another that you like?
I mean, I still use ChatGPT a lot. It's how it's integrated in.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily me sitting in front of the, you know, the platform and asking for copy, for example, but it's the back end when we integrate it into our system where that's where we get some exciting stuff. But of course, we get, you know, the big other models are there, whether it's Claude or what have you. So.
Okay. And now let's talk about data and data hygiene specifically. I know we touched on it earlier, but it's one of those things people don't love to spend time on. But, you know, data is the lifeblood of your business, right? I just had a conversation yesterday and they said, well, we're afraid to start communicating to our customers because we haven't for years. And what if we lose them? I'm like, you're already on the path to losing them because your competitors are having that conversation. And so, but also data hygiene is important because, you know, you want to keep that data clean. You're going to have 24% on average. This doesn't mean it's specific to your brand, but just across all industries, you know, you have a 24% list churn every year and that, you know, people are unsubscribing. Hopefully they're not reporting you as spam, but can you talk about why data hygiene is important? And especially in the context of trauma-informed marketing specifically.
Yeah, absolutely. I had a conversation on a podcast, goodness, was it last summer already? It's flown by with incredible, incredible trauma-informed consultant, Kelly Campbell. But we talked about data hygiene and how it is trauma-informed marketing. Because, you know, whether you're a Chewy or a bank, right? They're both companies where, say, a death of a loved one, because a pet is a loved one, really comes into it, right? Oh, oh my God, I'm looking at my cat right now.
Triggered. I'm like, my baby, but it's so true.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's where cleaning that data. And it could be personal-based, too. Like, how many people separate from their partners every year? Are you still sending direct mail? Because people do, right? Are you still sending direct mail to the ex? Yes, I can testify. Yes, you do get mail for the ex, at least in the first couple of years, right? And then you triggered someone.
Yeah.
And it's just a mass mailing that you're spending a lot of money on for no reason.
Oof. And that could be legal implications also in cannabis, craft beer, et cetera. Like, right, if you're maybe you, you know, you're not doing the right hygiene practices and your data is not right. And now, I mean, now you're not compliant. And that's a bigger issue.
Yeah. So let me just quickly give like a really startling example where I think a company is partially liable if things like this happen. So I had an experience personally where I reached out to a jewelry company that I'd gotten my wedding band from. And obviously it was a stressful time, a lot of big anxious time. And I was just like, where are the resellers? Like where, right? And they answered me, my email, my phone number, and the message. They answered me, except they didn't. They answered my ex.
Mm.
That is data hygiene as it's worth. And so he sent it to me and then I lost it, right? I was like, went after them and got so upset. And they answered. Not to me, but to my ex.
Oh, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah, so it was twice. And the thing is like, then put someone else that, you know, luckily was not me, someone else is where there's more of a safety concern.
Yeah, oh, right? Yeah. Oh my gosh.
And so if something happened, who's at fault?
Yeah.
Of course, the perpetrator's fault, of course, right? But if that brand was sitting there with not clean data, and I understood how they emailed my ex. Like a lot of people are like, how did that happen? Well, his email was in the profile too. We bought it together, right? Both of our emails were there. So it makes sense. But that's literally not responding to the email you've received a message from. And, you know, this applies to a lot of companies. It applies to banks. It applies, you know, your telephone company, your utilities, right?
So many. I mean, gosh, I feel like this happened. I just saw a post on, of course, on LinkedIn with a cannabis attorney talking about this. And I think the problem is, too, you have to be extra careful because people think cannabis companies, oh, they're going to have a lot of money and they have a reason to almost target you, like similar to a bank. They're looking for your mistakes, right? And I can't remember if it was transactional data or what the information, but it was PII, essentially, you know, personally identifiable information that was shared with somebody else that shouldn't have. And so, yeah, you got to be careful about that. And so make sure you have a process for that and you're regularly looking at your list. And again, and even like the Chewy example, it's like, you know, the last thing you would want is to be getting campaigns that are personalized about, you know, your dog that passed away that was in their system. Like, and that's happened. And so you got to be really, those brands have to be very particular, but all brands really have to be conscious of that and take those basic practices into consideration, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so can you talk about why segmentation is important for creating brand loyalty and higher conversions?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's the standard segmentation like we all kind of do, whether it's demographics, even psychographics related. But it's really what we were just touching on, right? That's the kind of segmentation maybe you are opting out for something. Well, if I've opted out for Mother's Day, am I opted out the following year? How clean is your data? Or does it reset? Because in my experience, I've had it reset. So are you losing that brand affinity, right?
That's a good point. And what about segmenting, like, or get, maybe this is more preference center, but I'm thinking like in both of these spaces, like you could have in craft beer, maybe people that are recovering and maybe they were, maybe they want non-alc, you know, options or education, or, you know, I think there's a lot of changes there in terms of segments and people just are like, oh, male, female, but there's so much more. Like it's, you have so much diverse data points in your CRM or beyond that you can really leverage.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I think about it even from like psychographics, right? Yes. I'm a single mom. I'm in New York City. I like baking sourdough. Right. But unless you're King Arthur Flour, you know nothing about me. That's your demographic and a little bit of, you know, what I like to do with myself, you know. But yeah, there's definitely ways that we traditionally segment that are just missing the picture.
Yeah, they really are. And toy around with it. I mean, you can send out surveys, collect first and zero party data in unique ways and start learning more and kind of building that out. So then you can try new things because I think people do get really stuck on segmentation or personalization. And it's like, well, you're still kind of sending a blanket message that maybe isn't relevant to all this segment because you're not really setting these parameters in the way that you should. And again, it's the more you become, you're sending irrelevant stuff. It's like, again, kind of traumatic too, because you're just like, well, this person doesn't care about me. And they get further away from you as a customer.
Yeah, absolutely. So take like, maybe it is a craft beer example or cannabis where you have varieties, right? Coffee company would apply to. And yes, you can personalize. You can say these were your top, you know, three items that you purchased last year. But why don't you start with a survey and say, maybe you probably shouldn't ask a recovery questions directly. You know, that would feel like an invasion, but like, then like the question of, do you still want our emails, right? And someone in recovery is just going to say no. And then you've completely avoided triggering them by, say, sending a beautiful, right, customized campaign that's like, we know that you love Kenyan coffee like I do, right? And here's our new, you know, latest, definitely for you, obviously. Well, some people are in coffee recovery, but not exactly how I meant it.
Yeah, but I agree. And I don't know, there's a lot of different ways to give them control and update preferences. And to your point, you don't have to, it's not like black or white, like opt out because now you don't need this, giving people that opportunity to ask. And it's like, hey, what kind of educational content would you want? Non-alc, you know, or cannabinoid education, whatever it is. And then they're, to your point, it's not feeling like you're answering like this doctor profile in an office and going, what the hell do you need that information for?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it struck me earlier, and then I didn't mention that about cannabis. I mean, there are a lot of people with medical conditions.
Yep. Exactly.
That purchase cannabis, which is inherently related to trauma, right? Whether it's chronic pain, autoimmune, PTSD, right? There are a lot of customers that come from that space. So how you market to them is really important.
So true. And if you're looking for, you know, an organization that helps with trauma survivors in the cannabis space, check out This Is Jane Project. They're a badass nonprofit organization in the space. They help get survivors like access to cannabis and enable them in a lot of different ways.
That's amazing.
Yes.
Sounds like an amazing organization. Yeah.
Yes, I love them. I had to give them a shout out. All right, let's move into the lightning round.
Oh no.
Yeah, so you've got 5 questions, 10 seconds to answer. Are you ready?
Ready as I'll ever be.
All right. What's your go-to lazy dinner?
Ooh, popcorn.
What's the best book for entrepreneurs?
Any fiction book.
Yes. What's your favorite music?
I'm kind of a mix, right? A lot of pop music, but I'll mix from the 50s on. So
nice. I love it. You're eclectic. What's a cause you care deeply about?
Definitely survivors.
Yep.
And, you know, trauma related.
Yep. What's the craziest thing on your bucket list?
Ooh, around the world trip.
Around the world. Hey, that sounds perfect. Well, and it's getting me excited. I'm going to Costa Rica in a couple weeks for the next season of the podcast. We're going to have a special episode, and I'm going to travel down and bring some beer back from a Costa Rican brewery to enter beer into the World Beer Cup competition. So I'm excited. I'm already dreaming about the beach.
Awesome. Awesome. You'll have such a ball.
Yes. And I can't wait. And thanks so much again, Kat. I really appreciate you coming on. If you're listening and you need quick links, check out our Market Like a Badass show notes with links to social handles. But in your own words, though, can you please tell our audience where they can find you?
Yeah, absolutely. Always on LinkedIn, Kat Kennan. And I have the 2 websites, so radicalcustomerexperience.com. And bvscore.ai.
Yes. Well, thank you again for coming on. I'll drop this info in the show notes so our listeners can find you. Follow us on Apple or Spotify, or go to marketlikeabadass.media for the latest episodes of Market Like a Badass.